For thousands of years, people have been telling dark, scary stories about the woods. First in myths and legends, later in fairy tales and folklore. Hansel and Gretel, Red Riding Hood, Beauty and the Beast. They all came to grief wandering in forests. Or rather, the forest, the enchanted forest, the magical woods, where all the fairy tales and myths and legends take place. To find out why the forest keeps drawing us back, Anne Strainchamps turned to the British scholar Marina Warner.
Well, I think the first thing that one should say is that the forest is mysterious and trackless and pathless, and so has intrinsic qualities that are endangering but also kind of thrilling. I mean, one shouldn't forget that the wood figures very, very strongly in our fairy tales as a place of initiation, where the hero or heroine is tried and proved, where self-discovery takes place. The forest is the arena for that.
Why is that, do you think, though? What is it about forests that seems to symbolize the arena for initiation?
Well, I think that in some cases, symbols are rooted in the actual intrinsic properties of the emblem. Forests did cover with, you know, thick darkness, thick impenetrable, and they have a life of their own, and they were full of animals. I mean, now, of course, that's vanished, but they were full of the whole bestiary of our imaginations. The wolf, so strong in fairy tale. The bear, also very strong in many fairy tales. The Beauty and the Beast beast is frequently depicted as a kind of bear.
And it's interesting because so many of the animal figures you're talking about, they come about in stories involving shape-shifting or transformation, which is at the heart of so many fairy tales. You know, the prince becomes a beast, or the animals talk or transform into wizards or witches. Doesn't that sort of suggest that we see the forest as a place that is overflowing with possibility?
Well, the world of fairy tale very often sees continuity between all organic forms. The souls just, you know, move from one form to another. Nothing is really ever quite inanimate. So trees in the forest, like the animals, are kind of sentient and conscious. And, you know, when I was a child, I had picture books, and it was the trees that frightened me. You know, in Arthur Rackham's illustrations, the trees are alive, you know, they have eyes in their trunks and their twigs, you know, their bony twigs are like fingers. They're reaching out to grab the child.
And don't you think it's also perhaps part of our, kind of deep historic memory? As you said, you know, long time ago, all of Europe and all of this continent were covered with trees and dense, impenetrable forest. It would have been truly scary.
Well, and a lot of people now do believe in the life of trees. Our heir to the throne, Prince Charles, is famous for tree hugging. he's a bit of a New Ager, and he, you know, but certainly believes in the sort of life inside the tree that is, you know, that can be tapped by contact.
Is the wildwood sometimes a locus of sexuality? Thinking about, I don't know, the thicket of thorns that surrounds Sleeping Beauty or Rapunzel.
That's a beautiful allusion, yes. Well, I think that connects to the idea that it's a place of sexual initiation. When Little Red Riding Hood goes to take her mother the pot of butter and the cake, you know, she's entering puberty, as it were. I mean, the encounter with the wolf is, in some of the stories, it's quite explicit. They actually have a kind of more of a relationship than when she's simply devoured. And Angela Carter famously drew that out and has Red Riding Hood sleep happily with the wolf. And then Kiki Smith, the artist, American artist, made a very beautiful sculpture of a little girl with a furry face. Mm-hmm. The sculpture is called Daughter. And she's the daughter of Red Riding Hood and the wolf. Yes. But I suppose one, you reminded me when you said the thicket of thorns, of a totally different body of illusions, which we should definitely bring in, I think, at this point. And that is that in Norse mythology, where the woods are very, very important because the whole culture depended on wood with their wooden ships, the Vikings, and they imagined a world tree, the Yggdrasil, which grew, right into the bottom fundamental reaches of the world. and our world sat within it, and everything depended on this world tree. Well, the world tree feeds the symbolism of Christ's cross, especially in Northern Europe.
Because wasn't Odin hung on, yes, on that tree?
Exactly. And so Jesus' rood, you know, his cross, is often referred to as a tree.
Well, you know, art historians often compare the architecture of Gothic cathedrals to forests or trees. They talk about the, you know, seeing the shapes of tree branches reproduced in the elaborate fan vaulting that holds up the ceilings.
Yes, and the light, the beautiful, beautiful way that light is filtered through the stained glass windows, that very much seems to me to reflect the way the forest floor is kind of dappled and slanting rays come through the trees. It's very, very much so.
I mean, so it's as though we've recreated those sacred groves, but in stone.
Yes, I think that's right. Mm.
You know, it's interesting thinking about this whole long history we've been talking about, and the way we so often talk about forests today is we mourn their loss. We talk about the deforestation of the world, and I wonder if what we're really expressing is the sense that we have participated in disenchanting the world.
Yes, and stripping it and plundering it, absolutely. I mean, it is very, very distressing when you still see, you know, mahogany being felled, being sold for kitchen surfaces, and it's very, very appalling.
What we've also cut down is maybe our own connection to a piece of our psyche, the non-rational, enchanted piece of our psyche.
I think that it's one way that one can try and keep literature and literature of myth and fairy tale to the fore as important, because this kind of respect is enshrined in them. One, you know, inhabitant of the forest whom we haven't mentioned so far, but who's very, very important, is the sort of old woman of the forest. In Russia, Baba Yaga lives in the forest in seclusion. She's the old hag whose house runs around on chicken legs, and she is sort of cannibalistic and eats passing children in the forest. But she's also capable of great kindness and sometimes of wisdom. And so she's a sort of counterpart to the, you know, mysterious figure like Grandmother in Red Riding Hood. Why does Grandmother live in the forest, in the depths of the forest, near wolves?
Well, that's a good question. It never occurred to me to wonder what the hell Grandmother was doing living in the forest.
I mean, these old women of fairy tale are often the fairy tale tellers themselves. And as such, she's also, you know, a figure who knows the berries, and she knows the leaves, and she knows how to make the teas. And I mean, so much of the folklore of the past places this kind of figure at the center of midwifery, of different kinds of alternative medicine. And then, of course, once medicine was formalized, which was quite a long time ago, I mean, in the Middle Ages, they became alternative people. I mean, they became marginal, and often, you know, they were condemned. And that's when they start morphing into witches.
Do you think when we do something as ordinary today as take a walk in the woods, some of these many illusions we were playing with are there for us subconsciously at the back of our minds?
There probably are some physiological trace memories to do with, and how a forest, a wood, will thrill one or inspire kind of fear that, you know, recall when we were kind of animals and hunting for our prey.
Being hunted.
Or being hunted, exactly. But I think that it's one of the reasons that, you know, we need to keep poetry and song and stories alive in our circulating culture, in our popular culture, is because we haven't really got a way of thinking about these things if we don't have the stories.
Marina Warner writes about art, myths, symbols, and fairy tales. She's a trustee of England's National Portrait Gallery, and her latest book is called Stranger Magic. And Strange Champ spoke with her.
Went for a trip to the Redwood Forest. Mama was at home just praying for us. Went past station and packed our tents. I woke at midnight with sounds in my head. There's something out there looking around in the midnight air. There's something out there.